Hold it, you got a gavel?
No. Well, it's 9 o'clock, so we'll go ahead and call the meeting to order and get started.
All right.
I think everyone's aware that at the last meeting that I was elected the commission chair, so this will be my first meeting that I'm organized and did the agenda. So if I've missed something, I'm truly sorry. Just please let me know if I mess it up, and I will fix it.
We'll call you on it.
Yeah, to the best of my ability. The first thing is I'd like to say welcome to Mike Hansen. He is our newest commissioner. He's the NFB representative replacing Carol Jenkins, who took a new job, so she was no longer able to serve on the commission board.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome to you.
Yeah, welcome.
All right.
And now we'll do the, well, I should tell you that the meetings are recorded and available on the website a few days after the conclusion of the meeting for you to review. Well, there's also minutes. So everything's recorded today. So I think next we'll go around the room and everyone that is here can introduce themselves, just your name and perhaps the city that you're from. I guess I can start. I'm Julie Johnson, the chairperson of the board, and I'm from York.
Okay, I'm Nancy Altman, and I'm from Hastings, Nebraska.
I'm Jimmy Arock. I represent the American Council of the Blind in Nebraska, and I'm out of, excuse me, I'm out of Omaha.
Daryl Walla, one of the commissioners, and I'm from Omaha.
Mike Hansen, I'm the NFB representative, and I'm also, I am from Lincoln, excuse me.
I'm Kathy Stevens, I'm an administrative assistant for the commission, and I'm from Lincoln.
Terry Harris, I'm the business enterprise program administrator, and I'm from Lincoln.
Carol Jenkins, VR Counselor, Omaha.
Jan Stokebrand, business counselor.
I'm Don Ward, business enterprise counselor out of Lincoln.
Todd Shoemaker, I'm a vendor out of Lincoln.
Susan Rocker, I'm from Lincoln.
Santos Floyd, Santa Director, Lincoln.
Bob, why don't you go next?
Bob Deaton, Lincoln.
Thank you. And on over to the other side.
You guys at the back. Terry Brand Porter, Lincoln.
Can you spell your names for me, too, please?
We can get this spelling.
Melvin Forster, vendor from Lincoln.
Monty. You give me your name.
I'm John Wick. I'm with Outlook Nebraska, Omaha.
Dan Kramer. I'm also with Outlook Nebraska, Omaha.
Katie Larson. I'm with Outlook Nebraska.
Anthony Eagle, Outlook Nebraska, Omaha.
Sandy Wampler. Omaha, Nebraska City, I'm sorry.
Doug Wampler, Outlook Nebraska, Nebraska City.
Does that leave it up to me?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
I have two things to say, one of which my name is James Nyman, and the other one is what the hell's Outlook?
Outlook's
a... Oh, that's a good question.
Delighted to hear that.
Yeah. Pearl Van Zandt, Executive Director of the Commission, and I'm in Lincoln.
Hubert Paulson, Lincoln, doing the recording.
And Julie, just a second. Were there were at least one that just came in?
Next.
Sandy Alvarado
from Omaha, vendor.
There's two.
And then Monty, you didn't introduce yourself. Monty?
Speak up, Monty.
Can you introduce yourself? Okay, he doesn't hear us. All right. Monty, what's his last
Bailey.
Name? Bailey. And then folks in the hall, do you want to introduce yourself? They're like right at the door.
Oh, do we need more chairs?
I think they're having a conversation.
I think that's just my husband and my family. They're trying to find out where Walmart is.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
That's cool.
We will need...
We saw Target on the way in, but we want to find Walmart.
And Nancy.
Nancy Plural, Omaha District Supervisor, Omaha.
And Nancy, we will need more chairs if more people come, so if you could kind of scope out and see where you could find some.
Do you need help, Nancy?
I can get it.
We may not need a lot, but right now I think there's only one opening. Okay. All right, that's everyone.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
Okay, the next thing is announcements about public comment. There are a few items on the agenda where it says public comment, and that is the time that you get to speak. If someone from the public absolutely would like to speak at another time while we're discussing another thing, if time allows and it's relevant, I may allow that on a case-by-case basis, but I would prefer that you keep your comments to the public comment time so that we can keep on schedule. Okay, as I mentioned, all the meetings are recorded and available later on the website if you want to review them or verify facts or whatever.
Madam Chairman.
Yes.
This is Hubert. I have a kitchen timer that I use to time the sections, and so sometimes you'll hear the beeps from me setting the time and when it indicates the end of an allotted time period, just so everybody knows what the little beeps are up front here.
Thank you, Hubert. May I add?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. This is Pearl. Just one more point about the public comment. If you know that you need to leave and we're not to a public comment yet or past it, but you know you need to leave. Mm-hmm. In the past, you just let the chair know that you'd like the floor, and if time permits, then that would mm-hmm. be allowable as well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Julie, Madam Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
I was just going to say that you might mention that there are coffee and water and treats in the back.
Right. Nancy, on the back wall, which I believe is the west wall, there is coffee, water, snacks, all that, napkins, cups. So if you would like to help yourself, please do that as unobtrusively as possible. Thank you. Okay. Lunch is at noon. Do we know what the...
Let's ask Kathy how that's going to work.
Lunch is at noon. We're having pizza delivered. And there's also coolers of pop in the back along the west wall on the floor.
Okay.
And then there's a tray of cookies and a relish tray.
Awesome. Thank you very much for taking care of that.
I'm hungry already.
Sounds good.
We relish that idea.
Okay. Also, for your viewing pleasure, there are copies of the Nebraska Open Meeting Act. Those are the laws that regulate what goes on at these meetings, and those are available for you to look at.
And
sure.
They're right here by me. We have both print and Braille. And then the agendas, I don't think those got to very many people. Print and Braille right at the end of this table.
Hand me a copy.
Okay. Okay, and on the note of the agenda, if I could get someone to read that agenda quickly so everybody...
I could do that.
Thank you, Daryl.
Okay, we've had our opening and taken care of the information on lunch and so forth. We will start after reading of the agenda here with the approval of the minutes. 9:20, we will have focus topic, business enterprise program. 10:20, public comment. 10:35, we have a break. 10:50, we have the report from our chairman. 11 o'clock, we have the report from our executive director. At 11:45 is public comment. 12 noon is lunch. We will proceed with old business. It says here 1 o'clock, budget update, 1:20, NIS update and other state personnel issues, 1:25, NFB newsline update, 1:30, client assistance program, which is called CAP, C-A-P, complaints or issues. 1:35, commissioner attendance at consumer events. And we go to new business at 2 o'clock, review of policy on client attendance at consumer conventions. 2:30, public comment. 2:40, election of executive secretary. 2:45, final announcements. Next meeting is February 6th, 2010, Omaha. The focus topic will be deafblind services. We will decide on dates and topics for May, August, and November of 2010. 2:55 is scheduled for adjournment.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so our first item is the August 8th minutes, and Kathy has sent those out to us, and we have made revisions, and has everyone seen and read the revised minutes from the last meeting?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yes. Okay. So, do I have...
I make a motion that we approve them as amend or as corrected.
Second.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And we'll have a vote. So, Mike, are you on the end?
Yep. And I'm going to abstain.
You're going to abstain. Oh, yeah, because you...
I wasn't
that
here.
That was probably before. Did you get a copy of the minutes?
I did not receive a copy, but I obtained one.
Okay.
I mean, the one wasn't specifically emailed to me, but I obtained
but
one.
But you got it from the website?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. Daryl, are you next?
Yes, I approve.
You
approve.
Okay, Jim?
I agree, I approve.
Nancy?
I approve.
And I'll, yes. So the minutes are approved from the August 8th. Meeting. Okay. And our next item is the business enterprise program focus topic. And there was information emailed to the commissioners of program review materials. And we have had time to look at those and review those. Thank you very much for sending that information. So I will let Terry Harris take it away.
Okay.
Tell us all about BEP.
All right. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
I don't know exactly how you want me to proceed. Do you want me to kind of go over the things, highlights of what I sent to you folks in terms of the I sort of sent an outline report about where we're at? I can do that. And I'd also like to, introduce my staff.
Sure.
And I'd also like to introduce the vendors that are here.
Sure.
In which order would you, and how would you like me to proceed?
That order sounds just fine.
Okay. I'm just going to kind of touch on the highlights about the Business Enterprise Program then. The Business Enterprise Program in Nebraska is focused around the Randolph-Shepard Act, which is a federal law. There is the federal law. There's a set of rules and regulations that go along with that law. For the state of Nebraska, there's the law that makes this a commission, also includes the law that sets up the business enterprise program. We also have a copy of, or also have rules and regulations that also implement the Randolph-Shepard program. Those are on the website. They are Chapter 3 of the rules and regulations for the commission. It's titled 192, Nebraska Administrative Code, Chapter 3, the Blind Vendor Program. Right now, we currently have 20 vendors. When I went through and made a list of all the different areas where we have sites, I thought we had like 67 or so. It turns out that there are a total of 77 different areas. Because to explain that, some of those areas just have one machine, too. There's a couple that only have a pop machine or a pop and a snack. But at each and every one of these, we have either a verbal agreement or a written agreement. When I first took over in 1986, we had 16 different sites with 15 vendors. So we have not grown a great deal in numbers of vendors, but we have expanded each facility in terms of how much the earnings are. That's the idea of having so many different small sites. I need to elaborate, and I'm not quite sure if I did in my narrative that I sent you. There is a difference between a site and a facility. A facility is what we have a manager for. There are 20 managers, so we have 20 facilities. But a facility can entail one site, one larger site, or several small sites as in a vending route. So for the vending route, each vendor is responsible for their own driver, their own vehicle. So therefore, the need for quite a bit of income generation in order to pay for all these different things. So kind of with that as an overview, I would like to introduce my staff, and then we can entertain questions, okay?
All right.
First of all, my staff consists of Don Ward and Jan Stokerbrand. So if what I would like you to do is just tell your title, how long you've been with the agency, and a little bit about what you do.
Hi, I'm Don Ward. I'm the other person in the Business Enterprise Program here in Nebraska with Terry Harris. My title is Rehabilitation Counselor. I'm also secondary title is Equipment Specialist for the vending program. And I work with all 20 of the vendors across the state, and I go to all 77 locations throughout, you know, the time period of a year or as they need help. I work with the vendors with anything big or small that they need, as far as changing a light bulb to moving equipment, setting up new locations. We're responsible for, you know, keeping the machines operating, and a lot of what I do is getting the parts and getting them there, sending parts that we need to the gentlemen that will work on it themselves or the vendors, and as needed, going and doing that myself. Then another part of the counseling part of what I do is, as we open new locations and bring in new vendors, I train them on everything from A to Z, top to bottom, from changing light bulbs to setting up the machines. And that's basically what I do on paper. There's a lot of things that I do that aren't on paper that are just, as anyone needs help with anything, I'll try and do what I can.
Hi, I'm Jan Stokerbrand, and I've been with the program 2 years now. And I work with the vendors in the program verifying their profit and loss statements. And this last week, I just finished the fiscal year reports, so I thought I would just give you a few numbers to let you know the volume that we're dealing with. Gross sales were over $1,300,000 for the vendors in the program, and I think that's a pretty impressive number. Gross profit was approximately $500,000, and net profit was just a little over $300,000. And the set-aside collected for this last year was just over $41,000. And every month I send out the monthly set-aside report. So if you ever have any questions on that, you can just give me a call or call Terry.
This is Don Ward again. I just forgot to mention, I've been with the program here just over 10 years. But what I wanted to mention that I forgot was, in those 77 locations, I'm also responsible for the inventory, the fixed asset report every year. And at current time, we have right at 300 machines that those 20 vendors operate across the state.
I need to add a little bit more. That way, I actually have more machines that Don gets involved with, too. The 300 are the machines that are actually owned by the agency. We also have pop machines and so on that are part of the different pop companies. So there's at least another 100 or so machines. What I would like to do next is introduce the vendors, let them tell how long they've been with the program, and a little where they're located, and a little bit about their facility. Okay? The first person here I'll introduce is Melvin Forrester.
Okay, I've been with the program for 23 months today. I'm located at the state capitol, the 501 building, and the exec building. I have 7 sites in the 3 buildings. And I've really enjoyed doing it. I have a lot of fun, but right now it looks like I may end up losing it because they put it up for bids. The state put it up for bids, and a corporation came in and has outbid us, but they're still trying to settle on the pricing and stuff as far as we know.
Yes, currently on that, we have a contract through June 30th, 2010. They have a 30-day option of canceling the contract. To date, we've not heard anything more about that. So as far as we know, we have a contract through the end of June 2010. The next person I'd like to introduce is Todd Shoemaker.
Can These I interrupt?
Are yeah.
I'm lost.
Okay.
Can you explain maybe the bid process and what you mean by the 30-day whatever it was on your contract?
Okay.
I'm not the good idea about those.
The 30-day, we'll start with that one, is a standard piece of the contract. It's been in our contracts all along, so it's not something to be alarmed of. It is just that if they would like to cancel the contract, they have to give us 30 days notice, or we can give 30 days notice to cancel the contract as well.
Okay, so that's any time throughout the entire year, not at the end?
Any time throughout the entire contract.
Okay.
This one is only a year contract. But oftentimes they're a 3-year contract. Okay. The state office bill.
Answered my question too.
Yeah, mine too.
The bidding process was kind of a lengthy, in depth one this time. It was done differently than the standard way of doing it. The standard way of doing a bid process is to bid according to how much you're willing to think to say the facility is worth. Like you bid a percentage of gross sales is what they're normally on. This time it was not just that. It was a lot more in depth. They wanted us to bid. There's like 3 different things that they want us to do. One, they wanted to find out what kind of background we have. That's not exactly what they called them, but that's basically what they were for. They wanted to know the background of the vendors, how long you've been doing this, They wanted to know if you had the experience and the income and everything to keep going. They didn't want somebody to bid on it that would come from the outside that couldn't do it. I think that is the basic reason why they made us jump through all those hoops. But there was the biggest part of the bid, besides they score all these things, but the biggest part of the bid is based on square footage, which is really difficult to do. We went through and figured it out with square footage, basically how much was that a percent of our net sales, because we needed to know how much we could afford to bid and still make an income on it. So it was, and that took a little while and a lot of work on the part of the vendors involved and Dr. Van Zandt, myself, Bill Brown, Don Ward, we all worked as a team to put that all together. It was a very time-consuming, took a lot of late hours and everything to put that all together. But anyway, what I don't understand is how the other guys did it, how they could come up with a bid without knowing what we know. They were never given what our profit ratio is, so they had to bid kind of without that knowledge. So as a result, they bid higher than we could afford to bid per square footage for the capital, for a lot of the things that Melvin has, because evidently they think that is the more valuable of the sites that's up for bid. However, the state office building is another story. We totally blew them out of the water with our bid because we knew the numbers. They did not. No one bid on the lower level, which is where we have the over-the-counter cafeteria-type facility. No one bid on the... We have small peanut machines, small you know, they're like gumball machines. If you're familiar with, you put the quarter in, you get gumball. We have several of those in the state office building. Nobody bid on those. So we do have a bit of a priority law, and that is that if all things are equal, we will be given the bid. So what it depends on is how they decide what that means after reviewing the bid.
In state properties?
Yes, this is just for the bids that we're talking about. It was the state properties here in Lincoln. The state office building was involved, the executive building, the 501 building next door. They even had us bid on the Whitehall vending machines. We also bid on vending machines that are out at the state labs, which we don't currently have, but we bid on those just because they were part of the bid. And our first bid, we bid totally on everything. Another piece of the bid that was in there was they proposed a coffee area on first floor. We bid that, and we were overbid on that piece. But we don't have a contract on that. It's nothing that it was something that we didn't have a great deal of expertise in, and so we had a short fuse to put together a bid on that. We did do that. The people that got it were that's what they do for a living. So they did a very good job with their bid. Yeah. Any more questions about that?
Can I ask a question? How often do you need to do this bid? Is it at the end of the contracts, or?
We haven't bid it since 1989.
Well, how do they determine then when the bidding thing will? They just decide, okay, now it's been this many years, so now we'll do it again? Or?
Well, the explanation we were given is that the state auditor wanted to have a value of what I think he was made. What my speculation is, he thought we weren't paying enough to be in there
for the square footage,
or he wanted to be sure of what the value of the businesses were. That's only speculation. We were told that it was because of the state auditor that they put it up for bid. That was the reasoning we were given.
And when they decide they're going to do this bidding thing, is it like publicized in the paper, or how do these corporations know that, oh, we can have a chance?
It may have been publicized in the paper, but I don't think we know that for sure. We got a letter, so we knew about it. We were told which website to look on and everything. They have a website that I suspect a lot of these companies monitor. Okay. We didn't, but all the bids are put on a website. The purchasing has, and that's who did this, is state purchasing people or the people that are doing the bids. They have, each agency can do bids too. There's two categories, but state purchasing for the Department of Administrative Services are the folks that are doing this, did the bid solicitation.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
I'm sure.
Sure.
I have a question.
Okay.
One quick question.
Okay.
While you're on the topic of state properties that you're working, I know like the Department of Labor is moving into a new building here that they've acquired, I believe, from Windstream. Is that something like you guys are investigating to see if there's new possibilities there for locations?
We have not, because right now that's the first I have heard of that. I didn't know that.
Okay.
I didn't know they were moving. So that is a much bigger building. So I don't know if the Department of Labor is expanding or they're just interested in finding a new office space. I don't know.
They're going to continue to be in two. They're going to expand into two buildings, I believe, is the situation. They're moving to the build. They're absorbing the building to the north of where they are now.
Okay.
On the corner there.
Well, it's certainly be something to look into in the future, I believe. Now I have another question over here.
Well, that would be me. Would a qualified person be a trainer in a vending? With my previous experience, that might work out to your benefit.
Are you saying that you are a previous vendor? Is that?
Yeah, of 11.
Okay. Okay. What I would suggest you do is to call, to give us a call during the week, and we can discuss, you know, whatever you need to, you know, whatever your qualifications and what you're interested in doing. It certainly would be something we would like to know. Okay, my next vendor, and the newest one, is Todd Shoemaker. If you will say kind of how what you do, a little, you know, a little bit, kind of be brief of you.
Okay.
And you do a lot of things.
That's true. I'll summarize it. I became a vendor in the spring this year, and the first venture for the BEP program was a dining facility, which we acquired out at Ashland, the National Guard training center. And I look over the contracts, I oversee the operations, and I set in after every session. There's 15 sessions a year, and after every session I work closely in hand with the contract specialist from the National Guard and work out any details, propose any ideas that we need possibly to work on or assistance with from their end, and also negotiate any kind of fluctuations in meal prices, time frames, hours open for meal dispersion, and also anything that would come up, it comes through me. We have 16 employees at this point. We're in an alternate location because we're getting a new facility built that should be done by May 1st, which will be back up to 20 to 21 employees running full service. And we have a subcontractor that takes care of that aspect of it. I oversee the human resources aspect of those, though, for the human relations with each one of those employees, because the subcontractor's out of California. So I do all the invoices on a bi-monthly situation, or as I spoke, every 2 weeks on 15-day sessions, and submit those, and submit the classification verification invoices for the Health and Human Services aspect of BEP for them to pay. So it's on a 4-year contract at this moment with ops every year. So next March they start on July 1st and then June 30th. And next March and April we'll be going through the evaluation process or editing anything that we need to change in the contract prior to the July 1st startup date for another year's cycle. Is there any questions or?
Todd?
Yes.
Do you, you said that you oversee the human resources part of that operation?
Yes.
Are you employing any other blind individuals at this time in the cafeteria?
Not at this time. We are looking into that. That was part of the agreement factor with the subcontractor, that they would accept blind and visually impaired clients to do various tasks of employment out there, and possible office assistant training, which I would be involved with. So yes, that is in the future.
Thank you.
Okay, I would need to move right along. I knew Todd would. That's why I told him to be brief. He had a lot to say. There's a lot to do there. Okay, the next person is I have on my list. I'm taking everybody's kind as they came in. That's how I have it. Sandy Alvarado, if you would tell just when you got in a little bit about your business. I know you have a route, so. I have the microphone. If you'll just kind of hold it up by your mouth.
Just like a meeting again. you give it to me now, it's mine for good. I'm Sandy Alvarado from Omaha, Nebraska. I started in January of this year, and I do have a route. There's 5 different buildings that I am now in the control of, and they're all federal sites, as I understand. Nothing that's a state thing. It's been real interesting. It is difficult. Fortunately, my husband is my driver, so you know, he's cheap labor. But it makes it easy when there is an issue from different buildings. I have a, I think we all put our contact information on each machine in case they have an issue with refunds or things like that. Keeping things fresh and always looking for new products is one of the things I enjoy doing with this particular career choice. It's much different than my previous career choice. It's been very successful for me. And, of course, getting the paperwork, that's the disappointing part. You always have to do paperwork. But that's with any business. Pretty much that's what I do. I think I have like almost 35 machines that I stock and take care of on a monthly basis. So busy we are.
Okay, thank you, Sandy.
Sandy, I was just going to ask a brief question. I just wondered, I think you said you have 5 buildings. Is that what you said?
Yes.
I'm just curious. I know you would have to have a driver to go to each building, but how far apart are these buildings?
Basically. 4 of them are pretty close in proximity to each other. Majority of them are downtown Omaha. There is one that's out west part of Omaha, about 120th. Well, like downtown is like 18th Street, so I'm about 120th. Is the newest one. It's the FBI building. The one that's kind of out on its own. The rest are all in the downtown area.
Okay. Thank you, Sandy.
Sandy, 120th and what? I'm just curious out there.
120th and L.
Okay. I was trying to visualize it.
Kind of across from where Old Sam's used to be.
Okay. I was trying to visualize that area. Okay.
Okay. The next vendor is Howard Simons. I'll let him tell a bit about his building.
Yeah. Howard Simons. I've been in the program since 1989. I have the 2 rest areas out on the interstate, the 2 post offices in Grand Island, and 4 small trucks companies. And I service them, put the product in, purchase the product. I have a driver that helps me and try to do most of our own repair work. It's get my fingers in the wrong places sometimes, but it's an experience. I guess that's about it, Terry.
Okay, thank you, Art.
Terry, Howard, yes. Eat also, it seems like us. I think I've heard that some of the rest areas are closing along the interstate. Are there being? Is that affecting your guys' business at all?
Yes, it always affects us. That's where we get some. They are very lucrative. There can be during the summer. Mm-hmm. In the winter, they are not so much. So the unfortunate part is that when they do work on the rest areas, they don't work in the winter. They do it during the summer, which means that the rest areas are closed during our best and busiest times. The rest of the time is probably drops off to about 10% of what it does in the summer, primarily because of the tourist attractions and tourist things, you know.
So have you guys lost any sites then due to...
Yes.
And I guess what I was thinking of when I said closures, I wasn't meaning temporary. I guess I was under the impression that they were permanently
correct.
Closing rest stops now if they could not find sponsorship, is kind of what I understood.
Well, for us, I suspect Department of Road decision in terms of cost. Our first one that we lost, we had 25. The first one we lost was the one here in Lincoln, the solar rest area. And the reasoning I was told why they closed that one was because the cost of keeping the sewer and that part up. That was a big deal for them, I guess. They wouldn't handle the... flushes, I guess. That's actually what I was told for why they closed that one. And it was the only one that was totally solar, which was kind of nice. You know, it didn't rely on outside electricity, so that was kind of a nice attraction, I thought. I always liked it. Of course, they closed my favorite ones. The other two, they closed were the chapel rest areas. They were very pretty rest areas, very nice, but the thing is there was very little traffic on those areas, and of course the Department of Roads has to pay somebody there to do the lawn, take care of the snow, and I suspect it became too expensive for them overall. These are all monitored by the federal government, however, so I'm sure the Department of Roads had to go through and get all the necessary permission to close them, but indeed, those three are closed. I don't know if the solar one has been leveled. Maybe so. I know that they still park trucks there occasionally. I haven't been out and looked at the chapel ones. I know they told me that they were going to level them, and so we had to move our vending machines away from the building. I mean, it was a real short fuse for us there. So we were.
What about Goner?
Goner is closed, but it's only a temporary situation. It's going to be open again. We were told that it's going to be for only trucks. I don't know how they're going to police that, I suppose. I don't know how they're going to police that.
Yeah, I heard that it was open to trucks and not other pedestrian traffic.
That's what we've been told. I guess we have to wait and see, because it's going to be kind of strange how they're going to be able to police that. If somebody needs to stop, I would think they could. And speaking of that one, that is our last vendor that is here, Ray Johnson. If you can tell how long you've been here and a little bit about your business.
I've been in the program for 16 years now. I was the first one on the interstate as a trial. We had a year to prove to the road department that the blind could handle it. And we had a year to do it in. 6 months afterwards, eight months afterwards, they okayed it. So we felt real good about that. I felt real good about it, too, because I've seen other vendors getting jobs, so that made me feel real good. Now, about Goner, it's kind of a deal. I can't understand why they did it that way, but they have got us up for trucks. The trucks come in and go through the rest stop, go up back and park, then they come around and they go across the big figure eight. So I'm wondering if they will someday have a wreck there. I hope not, but I know these figure eight on the racetrack, they don't work too good. But and then also, while I'm saying that, before that, one other time, a trucker came in too fast in Goner. This was at Goner. And he came in too fast, he hit another truck, the back end of the truck, and it started a fire. The guy was in asleep in the sleeper, he burnt to death. So we know that they could come in too fast, and that figure eight, to me, it looks very dangerous. Now, I'm complaining too, because I'm losing one of the best ones I ever had. Goner was about 30% of my income. Now, with the trucks, I don't know what it'll be now. We do catch some at York. I have four rest stops. I got one at Goner, the one at Milford, and the two at York. And the one at York is picking up some that Goner misses right now. But by the time they get to the York one, they're close to York, so a lot of them go right on by. So I don't know where we're standing on the Goner, but I wish they would have left it open, because it took people from halfway between Lincoln and Omaha was the last one they got there, and then they come up on Highway 2, and they go all the way up Highway 2, and there's nothing on Highway 2, of course. That was the first stop they had. So that's why it was one of the busiest ones in the state, for that matter. So I don't know how it's going to come out otherwise. But I did want to mention them things, because I think there's some problems in the South. Thank you.
Terry, you said that situation was temporary, right?
The situation with the trucks is not temporary, that it's closed. It's still closed, is it, right? Or they open it this week?
No, it's
still closed.
They keep telling us they're going to open that. That's been about four times we've had that now.
They have not opened it yet, but they're going to, I assume they're going to open it soon. I believe when I called the last time Ray asked me, they were waiting for lights to come in. I believe that was the only thing they had left to do with that rest area. So, but yeah, as far as it being for trucks, I guess the jury is still out on that. We don't know. I would assume, based on the fact that a great deal of our income is done during the tour season, that indeed Ray could lose some money because there would be, if they don't allow cars, passenger cars to come in there, that certainly would take away the tourism aspect. So I guess it's kind of a wait-and-see thing. Maybe there'll be more trucks. I know that they are allowing the truckers to stay longer at the rest areas as they've increased the number of parking spots for trucks. They've also increased the time the truckers have to stop, so perhaps that'll help. I don't know. The jury's still out on it. Yeah, Ray has one more thing.
The one thing, they did need a place for the trucks. I agree with that. I just wish they had left it open for the cars as well. Mm-hmm. But I am afraid of that when they go across, and I hope nothing happens there, but that's about all I can say.
Terry.
Okay, yes.
Follow-up to my question I was asking before about the closures of the rest stops.
Yes.
Are you aware of, or are you worried about any other additional rest stops being permanently closed? I mean, obviously you'd be concerned about it if it happened, but are you aware of that they might be closing any additional ones?
I've heard talk about the Platte River one.
Okay.
But that was because of the cost to refurbish it. But I've also heard that they're considering refurbishing it, just part of it. You're doing a half, you know, not the whole thing, but just redoing part of it. So actually, that is where the last I've heard about that. I would certainly think they need to have that rest area there because it is the last rest area going into Omaha.
Okay.
I would think they'd want to keep it in part for the trucks and in part for the tourism. And they do have a nice tourism area there for a tour guide where people can stop in and get different brochures, learn about Nebraska, and so on. So I suspect it would be all those reasons would be a reason they wouldn't close it. But, you know, okay. I do understand why they closed the chapel, although I thought they were the prettiest of all the rest areas because they were out in a real scenic area. And they were certainly my favorite ones to go visit. But I do understand why they closed those. There wasn't enough flushes, and that's how they measure
how much
traffic is.
The other question that I had. The other question that I had related to the report that you filed gave to us was that. You had mentioned, let's see here, actually I was reading to you. We did have a couple facilities that did very poorly, therefore their medium income was average was reduced this year. Was that due to some of the construction that you're telling us about, like some of these rest stops where they're closed, or sales were just happened to be down?
Kind of both. The one, the sales happened to be down. The other, that is because of his main rest areas were closed.
Okay.
His main rest areas, the person that comes to mind when I wrote that is the person at Sydney.
Okay.
And those rest areas they are his bread and butter. The rest are just a cost. When we took over the venue on the interstate, they told us it was an all or nothing thing. So that vendor also has the Kimball ones. I would assume they generate the same number of flushes as the chapel ones do. So that means for us, it's bad for us because it also means less traffic.
Right.
But I think they may leave those open because they're the last two rest areas as you leave Nebraska.
Right.
And of course, and enter Nebraska because we have them on both sides. So I suspect they may leave those open. I don't know. If I were going to guess they were going to close two more, those would be the ones that I would say they would close. Would be because, it's going into Wyoming. Wyoming has a real nice big area right inside their border, about 10 miles from where our rest areas are there. So that it could be that they would, but a lot of times on these areas, the states don't play well together, so it could be that the state of Nebraska is just thinking, well, those are our last rest areas, we won't close them. So I don't know.
Okay. Thank you.
Daryl Waller from the Commission. Yes, I have I never have simple questions. it seems to me that this is a pretty hard job, rewarding but fun. I mean, rewarding but challenging. To what extent could
training for vendors, you know, be improved? It seems like you need to really work on some entrepreneurial skills. I'm even wondering, sitting here, would it be beneficial for potential vendors to go through some more commission, some more center training, mainly to gain that confidence and, you know, computer skills, the paperwork. I teach at a public school system, and they just dumped a new system on us, and we're supposed to just learn that stuff ourselves.
It's that way where I work, too.
And I'm sure it's that way a lot of places. I'm just wondering how the vendors feel as to their training, what could be improved. Would some center training be a possibility to gain that confidence? I told you it was a loaded question.
It is, and that's quite all right. We do use the center training to some extent. I don't believe, though, in any of my talks, the word confidence ever was part of the I realize that's what the center training does, but blindness skills is what we try to pursue, making sure that people have the skills to be able to do their paperwork, to be able to have good mobility, to get around, to be able to get to work. Those types of things have actually been where my focus has been, more than the confidence part, I believe. Usually, by the time we need a vendor, we have a counselor that has already evaluated a great deal of those skills. Mm-hmm. If we have somebody that their skills are in question, we send them through a 3-day stay at the center, and then they are evaluated. And if they need more skills, then they can be trained on whatever skills they need. Today, that's kind of how we've been doing that. Mm-hmm. The skills have been assessed by the counselor and of course, the candidate themselves. That's one thing. The other thing is there is very little opportunity for new vendors, because the vending program is a good program. A great deal of our vendors have been here for a long time, so there is not a great deal of turnover within the vending program.
Terry Jumirock, maybe I missed something, and I apologize if I did. When I think of vending, and I understand pop machines and all these machines are part of the program. When I think of vending, I for some reason think of the concept of vending, like the stand that Glennie and Leonard Weiland had a number of years ago, over the counter and interaction with people and so on and so forth. And how many vending stands does the agency have or is in the program that are over the counter?
Right now, we only have the one that I can think of, and that's at the state office building, the lower level. It's similar to what she had. Hers was more of a quick shop type of thing.
Yeah, it was in the federal building, yeah.
Yes, in the federal building.
Right. And do you know how much, and I know that, trying to figure out how to phrase this without sounding abrupt or what have you, do you know in that one office how much, use the word theft, is involved with, incorrect change being given or somebody just walking up and taking something without paying for it?
I don't believe that's a problem at all. They use cash registers there. Dave Hunt, I don't know, I didn't have Dave's permission to mention his name, but he is the person that runs the lower level cafeteria in the state office building, and he has talking cash registers. He has employees there if he had a question with terms of a bill, or there's always a lot of people around. Okay. That is a very busy place. I suspect when we first heard that the bids were going, they were putting the state office buildings up for bid. My suspicion was people had looked at how busy that area is. It is very busy, so it can be a lucrative business there, but it does require quite a few employees, mm-hmm. and so I think Dave does a real good job of staffing it. So I don't know of any concern about that, but I know One of the things we discussed, and you always have to be aware of when you bid a facility like that, are the number of staff that you need to help run it and what the salary is going to be and all those questions. So we have to take all those things into account when we place the bid at the state office building. So, okay. Any other questions?
Several.
Okay.
You'll have to help me do the math here, because I gathered that there was $300,000 in net profits. Was that?
I believe that was about correct, right?
So if you just, and I know some make more money than others, but if you just divided that by the 20 vendors, that would be about $15,000 a year.
Yes.
That's not a lot to live on.
It is not. And the unfortunate part is, at least for this report here, one of them that actually reported a negative income is the person out in the Sydney area. Mm-hmm. We've done a lot to try to boost that area the best we can. I mean, he's got a snack machine out at the airport, where the college, I think it's a college-run airport, yeah. Right, Don? Yeah. And then he has a snack machine at the college. He has a snack machine at the UPS building. He's got a snack machine out at the rail, at the Burlington Northern Rail, and we're even looking at adding another one for him. We've done a number of investigations trying to increase his income, but the unfortunate part is Sydney's a small sure. area, and that's one of the things. But like I said earlier, when we first took over the vending on the interstate, they told us it was an all or nothing thing. So we
could you explain what all or nothing?
All or nothing. All or nothing means we had to do all of the rest areas, or we didn't get any of them. Mm. We did start, like Ray said, a trial basis. Ray did three or four facilities just to show that we would do a good job, and that we didn't litter. We didn't increase the amount of litter at the rest areas, because now we were selling pop and we were selling candy and so on. That was the big concern, that we wouldn't be able to do the job. We wouldn't be able to, and that would increase their costs, because it would be more litter at the rest areas. That didn't prove to be the case, and so that's why we were able to expand on the interstate. We have another person here that does just the peanut machines and the state office building. It was something to keep him in the program. He had moved here from Lincoln, from Ogallala, mm-hmm. and he wanted to remain in the program. We had another person that was doing those. So that is a small business, very small sure. Number on there as well, and helps to skew the
right.
And I think the median income was closer, where that means where the most people fall, was closer to the 29,000 figure than what they, so that means we do have some very low areas that definitely skew that down.
Okay. According to Kevin Worley, then, what are the people in other states who are earning up to 50,000, what are they doing right? Or
I can tell you what that is. It's the size of the state. It's okay. The numbers of people. Those states that are making that, and certainly where Kevin is from, state of Colorado has a lot of federal buildings.
Okay.
They also have the military, the big military base there.
Oh, okay.
So they have a lot of things that definitely would skew theirs up,
right.
where ours is down. But they also have a few smaller ones. But
right.
but with the population, of course, that okay. and the number of federal buildings mm-hmm. in Colorado, it gives them a way better opportunity. I'd certainly like to have Colorado's
that makes
problems.
Okay.
This is Don Ward. I just wanted to add one thing to your question, Daryl, about the vendor at Sydney being our one person that showed a negative income this year.
Uh-huh.
He's also the vendor, if you remember, that lost the two chapel rest areas.
Right.
So his business was cut dramatically. Wow. And then that's why Terry and I worked very hard this last mm-hmm. year to build his business back up and add those other facilities. And in the last year and a half, is when we've added all of those other new the UPS in the rail yard and trying to get him some additional income outside of rest areas.
Well, it's good they have the support. That's yeah. Good.
Well, and then another thing there, his, like I said, his cash cow are the Sydney Sydney rest areas. Cabela's brings a great deal of traffic to the state of Nebraska, mm-hmm. and that's where those are. And there's a lot of tourism stuff out there in that area of the state that also help promote the Sydney rest areas mm-hmm. in the summertime. In the wintertime, they aren't so good. But the bad thing for our vendor there is those rest areas were closed two summers in a row, which means that he had a negative income 2 years in a row. Not a good thing. The unfortunate thing, when you have a negative income, that you still have the same bills. You still have that negative income means that somewhere that money is still coming. This vendor definitely is coming up with some extra money to keep it going. His driver has done it for free. So he's had a lot of support there with family and stuff to keep him going. So hopefully this next year, and see, two summers in a row, and this year being one of them, he's lost. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully next year he will show a positive income. He had in the past, mm-hmm. not a great deal. I would say his income was around $6,000-$7,000 at his best. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But still, it was an income to put with his disability, mm-hmm. and now we've increased a few things mm-hmm. for him. Certainly, it's something for him to do. That's where a great deal of the, when I don't look at the self-confidence part as much mm-hmm. for looking for a person, I have noticed it in every vendor that the ability to get out there and make your own living and to be doing something productive in society, that has built their self-confidence tremendously. Mm-hmm. Actually, as much as anything that could be done in the center, I believe. Mm-hmm. So we do need to have the blindness skills, certainly, mm-hmm. to be able to do some of these things, because myself, I am not equipped to do that. We just don't have the time within our staff to do it. But so certainly we can take them to the center. The center has been very good about helping us with either going through a full training program or just whatever types of things they needed. We've had people go there just for computer, just for to add to their cane travel skills, just depending on kind of what they needed. But I believe when I say the word confidence wasn't something I looked at as much, it was because I believe that being the vendor and in the vending program does instill a great deal of net worth to every person that's in the program.
Sure.
Are there any other questions?
Terry?
Yes. Jan's got something, yeah.
I was going to add that most of the vendors are lucky enough to have family members who can be their drivers or readers, but maybe something as commissioners you could think about would be, and one commissioner mentioned theft, and one commissioner mentioned training, and I put those two ideas in my head because we did have one vendor who had problems hiring trustworthy drivers, mm-hmm. and he did have a theft problem, right, Terry?
Yes.
And mm-hmm. that's something where they are a manager, maybe we could provide them with managerial skills mm-hmm. as far as the hiring process goes, or maybe if the commission could help them do background checks for the people they hire.
Wouldn't that be a federal estate
that's
issue?
That's interesting.
Wouldn't that be a federal estate issue, background checks?
Yes, and the problem with it, I don't see why we couldn't do that, the background checks for them. They aren't as expensive as they used to be to get have done. I believe it's Todd can tell.
$20. We have all of our employees go through it. It's $20, you know, within 48 hours. And then you have to be approved prior to that. They just don't take your credit card over the phone and say, okay, here's somebody's background. We go through a process of possibly 72 hours of pre-op prior to that. But that's pretty extensive. That goes back 20 years, the records that they hold.
So would that be the responsibility of the vendor to perform the background check? I mean, why should the agency do that?
Well, it would have to be put on the vendor because we don't always know when they get a new hire.
And so I can't justify the agency doing that.
But certainly it'd be something that we need to tell the vendor that
you
can
would
be
encourage,
done.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, you could work with the vendors to facilitate that process.
So yes.
Which, yeah, I mean, that's a good idea. But, I mean, I don't think that, I mean, I don't want you guys to think that that necessarily means that if you make it through a background check that you're a wonderful person and that you're going to show up every day for work, because that's pretty far from reality.
Yeah, but yeah, background check is one thing, but work ethic is another.
Yes.
There's various levels of that background check. I'm sorry. There's various levels of that background check that you can do. There's different facets of it. There's different levels. There's you could go back and it will, some of those that you request do show reference materials or recommendations or things of that nature over the last so many employment years as well. So now the requirements depend on what state we're in compared to what's legal. Some of them are 7 years, some of them are 10, and some of them are only 4. So it really depends on where they come from. Plus, if from a commission point of view, if you have more than just one entity, like say, if, like my entity, it would cost more than if you guys as a group rate did all 20 vendors, you get a better deal than that. So I just want to throw that in. So.
Yeah. No, I like Jan's idea, though, about offering more assistance with managerial-type training so that, you know, they can have better odds, you know, when they're hiring. That's an excellent idea.
And I suspect just because they're family doesn't mean they couldn't steal from you, too, so.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially down south. Yeah. Sorry, that was a call for it.
I know Randolph Shepherd has been under, you know, a lot of, you know, changes and debate and different issues. Where are we with current legislation as to ensuring that you know, blind can have more access to vending sites and so forth? I know that's a big topic, but is there anything new or anything?
Actually, the trend has not been as much to expand but to shrink the opportunities nationally. I don't think we haven't had that experienced any of that here, mm-hmm. but nationally they've tried to get the vendors out of the away from the
military
contracts,
yeah.
And mm-hmm. you know, there's just been lots of things. They've even talked about privatizing the rest areas. We've not had experience that here or heard any talk of that here, but certainly in the studies that I've read, that in other states they are experiencing that.
Okay, so that still hasn't changed significantly back the other way. It's still sort of shrinking in other...
It would be nice if I could say yes, okay. But okay. As far as the national trend, I don't believe that that is the case. Okay. Yes, I have a question over here.
You have a preventive maintenance program for the machines, like if to prevent... the breakdown of the machines by the vendor, or do you have any kind of repair service?
Both. The answer to yes, we do, and yes, we do. We do have a preventing maintenance program, and we do have a repair. Don is in charge of getting the repairs. Whether some of it he does himself, some of it he gets. Other people to do for us. We pay for all of it, and by that, I'll explain that in just a minute. And for preventative maintenance, all of our vendors have been trained over the years. I mean, this isn't something you start out with day one, how to do preventative maintenance, how to repair your equipment. It's something that you learn as Don works with them over years. Most all of our guys, as Howard explains, do most of their own repair. As best they can. I mean, sometimes they cannot, and certainly Don works with them on getting something repaired, or sometimes we have to bring a machine in to have it gone over by the experts, if you will. We've had to do that too. It's just lots of different things, but we do our own preventative maintenance type of things, and we do all of our own maintenance, or we cause them to happen in terms of that. What I was going to describe earlier, when I first took over the all the vending repair and stuff was paid out of set aside. That is not the case these days. We can use matching funds with federal funds and set aside to do the repairs. We have actually Fred Schroeder to thank for that, because during Fred Schroeder's term as the federal commissioner, he instituted that change. So that was kind of a big deal for all of vending across the United States.
I guess I just have one final question. I think we're about ready to wrap this part up. I guess I would like to know if there are any plans for expansion of sites, of machines, and of new vendors.
We have slight plans, but the trouble with it is we are run very thin with the staff that we have right now. We have more sites, and maybe not more vendors. We have more vendors than the state of Kansas, though Kansas is larger. We have more sites different agreements that we have where we have vending machines than does Iowa, although they are considerably larger than Nebraska. And we have as many as the state of Missouri, and Missouri has a lot of federal facilities. So we have little sites, but the problem with that is Nebraska is a large state, and we are spread very thin over the state. I would like to say, yes, we're going to be able to put lots of fine people to work, but what we have, as you can see, it takes a lot of different sites, a lot of different areas to be able to get any kind of an income for the 20 vendors that we have.
Mm-hmm. So would you say then that the current interested, for the amount of people that are interested, you'd think that the current amount of sites is fulfilling that need?
I actually would, the answer would be to that, no. I believe there is more interest than we have sites. I believe.
Well, I'm...
Yeah. But what I could say is maybe we need to promote people going to Kansas. The state of Kansas, I know, doesn't have enough vendors to do all of their facilities.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that is. But I know they are short. I mean, that's what we, Don and I have been told that, and I know also that the state of Colorado had that same problem. And I, in fact, I have sent at least two vendors that I can tell you, one of whom is still a vendor there and runs at least one cafeteria, if not two.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Freevold is his name. The other person's name is Russ Shong, although Russ Shong is no longer with us. But Jim Freevold still works in Denver. And as Daryl pointed out earlier, their, I believe it was Daryl, may not have been, their income is considerably more than ours is. They're even their average income. So certainly that is one way for an advancement, is to go to other states,
mm-hmm.
Even within our own vending program.
Julie.
Yes.
This is Pearl. Have you ever done something to communicate to the voc rehab counselors across the state about vending opportunities in other states?
I have not done so lately, but we have in the past.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be a good thing to put together to communicate to the voc rehab counselors. I worked with the clients across the state to have them, you know, if they're folks thinking about vending, and maybe the counselor says, well, you know, there's no openings right now, but if they know that it actually could be an opportunity if someone's willing to move.
Yes, it's something we just kind of learned about mm-hmm. Kansas. We didn't know that prior to this.
Right.
But when I found out that there was a chance that we might lose some of our facilities, I started looking to where we might do with our vending machines. One of my points of contact was state of Kansas, and that's how I learned
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
the
problems
of
Kansas
together.
Yeah,
yes.
That's a good idea. I think it's the general economy too. I mean, the unemployment rate is phenomenal. Everybody wants a job, and there aren't any. So I don't want you to feel like I'm picking on the vending program, because I don't think you're any different than.
Yes.
Any other questions on the vending topic?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is a request for questions from just from the commission people. I'm not part of the commission, but if you're putting now into the section where the
well, our next thing is public comment, so we can move right into that.
I wanted to make sure that Terry didn't sneak out before I started.
He wanted me to sing to you those things that I had sent you. So luckily, I didn't bring that up. And luckily for you guys.
I requested the key of C.
Oh, boy.
If there's no more questions from the commissioners, then we'll go ahead and move to public comment. So if the public has questions about the vending program, please feel free, or if there are general comments, we'll listen to those too.
Okay.
So I have a number of questions that I want to ask Terry, and maybe just his comment. If there are opportunities in other states for vendors, maybe just have the counselors identify people who would like to get rid of them.
That's on public record, Nyman. Get rid of it.
I don't need a job, Jim.
Thank God. Now I'm only kidding.
But I noticed Sandy Alvarado is here. Is there any other women in the program now, Terry?
Yes, we have Judy Beck, and I think that's the only two right now.
Oh, no, we're a
minority. Much so. We had as many as five.
The program a little bit that way. But now, do you still practice, I'm talking about two questions about bidding of different kinds. Do you still practice the opportunities of bidding on better locations when some vacancy comes up, or has that sort of died out?
No, we still do that, yes.
And has that, in fact, been used in recent times?
Oh, let's see. I'm trying to think of the most recent time. Well, one was, well, the last one was Sandy, actually. It was our last person that bid on one. And we added some things to her facility as a result of a bid. I think that was the last person that has done that.
So Sandy was in the program prior to the
yes.
present situation?
Okay. Yes.
Well, the other question about bids that I have, and this is, I don't know, any legal basis that the current auditor, Mike Foley, who can't keep his fingers out of anything, would have to require this audit that would then result in putting these facilities up for bid. There's no legal basis for that I know of. Many years ago, when we lost the state office building on a bid, the way that happened was that there was a section of the law that said that when commercial interests were wanted to make a bid on a facility that came up, then you know that we had to submit a bid rather than, but otherwise that it would go to the services for visually impaired and or commission and depending on what time we were talking about. Walt Radcliffe, a very well known lobbyist at that time, persuaded Ken Fugeron that what the law really meant was that we had to put it up whenever a commercial vendor expressed an interest, and we lost it at that time. But I know, and that was an incorrect interpretation of the law. And the question I have in mind is, does the auditor have a legal basis for requiring us to put up our facilities for bid?
None that I know of.
Tell him so. you'd be glad to hear that.
Probably not.
We were never told that, right?
No, he messes around. He did an audit of the cemetery out of Wayuka, and we might consider him taking up permanent residence there, but that's another issue.
Again, on public record.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, the only thing he ever did for me was that he left my constituency, but that's another question. Now, another question I have is that we had many years ago set up a system of contributions from the set aside and from individual vendors in a retirement program. Is that still operational?
Yes, sir, it is. We don't have as much interest as I know that we thought we would at one time. We have, I would say, some of the same people that participated in it back in your tenure are the same ones that are doing it today.
So we're getting fat and rich and big retirement incomes mm-hmm. coming out of that?
Possibly so.
Now, is that still managed by a financial company? Is it Jim Buddy still?
Yes, sir. He still does. I just talked to him last week.
Terry, I have a question.
Yes.
This is Hubert Paulson. I touched on this in a conversation with you earlier. Are you picking up anything on the commercial interests with the truck stops and restaurants at the interchanges, putting pressure on the state to reduce or shut down the capabilities of the vending at the rest areas?
Yes, we did that, especially in the Sydney area. The truck stops wanted to have the rest areas encompassed in their area. I'm not sure of the politics of that, but I know the decision of that, and that was to redo the rest areas. So we have those back again. They're now open. They opened in September, October time frame.
Thank you.
So if there's so many people that need a job, there is another good employer in Outlook, Nebraska, in Omaha, that are a good company. It's hired me for 7 years, and I enjoy it. They boost my confidence by letting me jump off of just packing and getting onto a machine, working on a machine and running it. We're getting more machines, and we are going to look for more help. And it's competitive wages with decided companies throughout the United States of paper facilities. And we're going to need a lot of help. And I know we've had struggles, but when a new business opens up, you don't please everybody at the first. And what with machine problems? You buy used machines and you have problems. Now we got new machines and the blind are, they're making them talking, so the blind are running them now.
I'm going to ask point blank, what is starting salary?
It depends on the machine, where you work at. If you are on a machine, it's more than what if you're on the floor packing toilet paper, because you've got more responsibility. And if you want more responsibility, there's growth and advancement problem.
Can you answer the question? What is the starting salary?
I'm not in the office. I cannot answer.
You don't know. Okay, that's fine.
When I started 7 years ago?
No, that's all right.
I'm just telling you what it was. When I started 7 years ago, it was 7.25, but it's raised since then.
Sure. Yeah.
But,
okay.
It's above minimum wage. I know that much.
Okay. I started 6 months ago, and it was $9. And okay. 50 cents for second shift added, and third shift an extra dollar.
Okay. Thank you.
That's what I had heard. I just wanted to.
Okay. Thank you.
This is Jeff Altman. I'm first vice president of the National Federation of the Blind of Nebraska. Unfortunately, workshops have a reputation, much of which is earned, for substandard wages, substandard working conditions and safety levels, also for discrimination, intimidation, and in some cases abuse. That's something that sheltered workshops are known for across the country, and workshops that take advantage of that legal structure within the federal government. With regard to Outlook Nebraska, suffice to say that lawsuits are underway.
Yes.
And with regard to NCBBI, National Federation of the Blind, would like to discourage the placement or assistance in placing people in that facility until these issues are resolved.
So
one person at a time, please.
Yeah, I mean, but that's not giving that person the opportunity to decide on their own. Because the commission didn't want my husband to work there. My husband went blind 15 years ago, and he did not work for 8 years because no one wanted to hire the blind. And when this job came along, it gave him back part of his life. It gave him back a little bit of, independence. And it wasn't a good place. I called NFB or NIB. I don't know where I called when it first, because it was that. But they are trying, and they have improved so much just over the last 6 to 8 months. I mean, Outlook is a good place, and you should not, as an individual, decide on if he has a choice. It's his choice if he wants to try to put work there.
I want to bring this conversation somewhere to an end, because this
could be my last day as commissioner. Who knows if I get, so I'm going to say what I feel. I feel like this has become a political agenda. I don't think this is appropriate for public comment. And there are some things that we are concerned about and we probably need to look into further.
And I have one question.
I want to say one thing. You can't take the voice of a few when there's more.
We don't know that, though.
Well, have you investigated?
Yes.
That's what I want to know. I mean, because there are more there, like myself and some that I brought with me, that I want to voice to you guys, because we don't have your guys' addresses or telephone numbers or emails to let you know we are happy. I tell Larry Roos that I am happy. I tell Nancy Kaufman I am happy there. So, are you guys listening to them or asking them?
We're going to have one person talk at a time, and I'm going to take names, and then I will call on people so that we can remain orderly. I need to tell people that the commissioners are accessible to the public. We get emails all the time. All you have to do is go to the website. There's a link for our email address. If you would like to speak to one of us directly, please call the agency and they will get you our phone number or leave a message where we can call you back.
Right.
Now, who would like to speak?
I'm John Wick from Outlook, Nebraska. I'd like to speak.
John.
Thanks. Well, first of all, I've been a director of fund development for the last 2 years. I was on the board of directors before that time. I think that looking how do we enhance our workplace, I think we make significant improvements over the last, like was said, 6 to 8 months. We're being judged based on the past, and you find me a business that opens up a new business that has everything fixed before when you turn key the operation. I find that there's 47 people there today, which 25 of them are blind, to thank Outlook Nebraska where it is today. It's become a quality operation, and the efforts being put forth, such as our workplace improvement council, our safety committee, the high focus is put on quality, handling of people. We have an HR function that does much more than any employer does. We help people with to find a place to live, their transportation. I personally have been involved to help people, whatever the case may be, whatever their needs are. And I really find this appalling. You need to know what's going on, and we've asked you people to come in, spend time with us, in order so that you understand what is going on. It is a great place. We bought equipment. We saved, you know, these 47 people. We went out and borrowed money to set up our operation. We went out this year. One of the bottlenecks was our wrappers, which wasn't allowing work to be done and causing problems, you know, from a work standpoint. We've purchased two of those. We've went out as fundraising. We've raised money for hardware, software that's allowed 6 new people to be in a job that always has been done by the sighted people. And in addition to that, these people's open positions, people have been hired. You know, there's a place down in Wichita, Kansas called Envision. We're going to be the Envision in the future. They have 250 blind workers in a city that's half the size of Omaha. And I'll tell you, right now we're looking at more equipment that'll increase somewhere in the range of 12 to 17 more people. 75% of our people on the converting lines are blind or visually impaired. And we have a contract through 2012 with a 5-year renewal, which is automatic if we're doing their job. And NIB, trust me, believes we're doing the job. And I'm telling you, we're excited. We bring business people in, and they see what's going on. They come out with a whole different perception. We're involved with the Lions Club. They're highly impressed. And I'm telling you, you people don't know what's going on. We've asked you to come out and spend time with us to see what's going on, our workplace improvement council, our safety committee. All of these things are being looked at very carefully. And I'm saying is, we're not the organization of the past, but I was involved in a 470-bed hospital as business manager. And I'm telling you, things always, when you start do something, you can't satisfy 100% of the people at all the time. And I really find this, being in business my whole life, I just find that what's going on today, it's very disappointing to me, because we can be one of the best organizations for the blind, and I think we need to be allies. We need to be working together, and we haven't been doing that. But we need to sit down and work out the problems that's out there, and you wouldn't know the place if you come in it, because it's a great place.
Okay. Jeff, thank you. Thank
Jeff,
you.
Jeff, stop. I want to shut you up. This is Jim Nyman. I'm puzzled
Jim,
by the whole thing. Yes.
Jim Yurok has the floor. Thank you.
Very quickly, Jeff, I want to clarify something you had mentioned. You had suggested that you had referenced that not placing folks at Outlook Nebraska because of perception. I want to clarify that. Are you speaking on behalf of the agency or the federation?
I am. That's what I was seeking the floor for.
Okay.
I want to clarify. I am speaking as vice president of the National Federation of the Blind. The opinions I'm expressing here are not necessarily the opinions of the Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired.
That's what I wanted to clarify, because you know, holding two roles as you do, you have to walk the fine line as a state employee. You can't sit there and say, don't go there because.
I'm speaking only on behalf of the NFP.
So that's what I wanted to clarify and get on public record in case there's any confusion.
And as things stand, I really cannot comment beyond what I've already stated.
Oh, and Jim, please. Say, are you done?
Yeah.
Okay. Jeff Altman has the floor.
I do not wish to imply that the reputation of sheltered workshops is necessarily what is taking place at Outlook Nebraska. But there is sufficient reason for concern that the NFB has taken the step of engaging in legal action.
Julie, there's an individual who has had his hand up a couple times. Folks, I want you to know, you need to get it. Putting your hand up is not going to get you the floor. You need to state your name, and then Julie will decide who gets...
When Jeff is finished, then we have Dr. Nyman, and then I will take more names.
She'll take names.
Thank you. Okay, Dr. Nyman.
Well, the expression I've heard of, you take names and kick butts.
Hey, she's got a Burger King crown. She'll do it too.
part of what I was going to say is I don't know that the commission, and this is of course a commission board meeting, has a stance with respect to what Mr. Wick and others have been saying. It was strictly an issue that Jeff Altman, as an NFB person, had raised, and he did use an expression which I think needs to be clarified. He said it does not necessarily represent the view of the commission. I don't know that necessarily. I would have said just take out the necessarily. I'm assuming that is not a view officially taken by the commission. The commission is not, maybe either Pearl or the members of the board can answer this. I mean, there's no action being specifically taken by the agency vis-a-vis Outlook, whatever it's called. Is that correct?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then I think I would recommend that Mr. Wick and others take advantage of an opportunity to go to an NFB meeting and, well, let's put a, take names and kick butts, you know, if that's what's involved. I was confused that it seemed that the remarks of Mr. Wick were and others was directed as though the commission were taking a negative stance in the commission board, and my understanding is that is not the case.
No, right. That is not the case.
Right.
The board is not proposing taking any action regarding Outlook Nebraska.
That's fine. And Jeff, you get together with these people and have a meeting, okay?
Julie.
Madam Chair.
Julie.
Okay. We have Mike Hansen.
I apologize. It's Mr. Wick that was just speaking a moment ago.
Yes. I wanted to make
sense. As a board, we've talked about, and I think this is okay to say, we did tour, and as a new board member, I was not able to do this. I might try to get the opportunity to do this next February when we're in Omaha for our board meeting. But the board did tour your facility I believe in August, was it?
March.
Was it March?
Yeah,
it was March.
February.
Okay, so it was 6 or 8 months ago, and you made the statement that you guys have made significant changes in the last 6 to 8 months, which from what the board might have seen at that time. And I guess I just would applaud your efforts, and we would encourage you to continue to make strides in that direction. I believe that we have some members of our agency, of the commission, that are going to work with you guys and look in on the facility from time to time and to see how you guys are coming, just to keep us informed so that we can see the great work that you guys are doing to improve the facility.
Could I just comment once?
Somebody had their hand up.
I really appreciate your comments. And
could I have your name, please?
It's
John Wick.
Okay. Briefly, please.
Yes. I appreciate your comments. And, we want to, like I said, we need to be an ally with the commission. And, we really want to sit down and have this ongoing working relationship and not back and forth with memos and so forth and emails, but you really got to find out what we're doing, because we are really focused on quality, how we treat our people, the effort we put into our people. I'm telling you, it's not done in other employers, but we do.
Do you have a new point that you would like to make? Because there's other people that haven't had a chance to speak.
That's fine.
Okay. Thank you. The gentleman who was raising his hand, I didn't get your name.
Tony,
please.
My name? Anthony Engel. I'd like to reiterate that to the Vice President of the NFB, I'd like to say that there's a difference between a sheltered workshop and a wage earning facility. And second of all, I think that the improvements that were made for the last 8 months at the Outlet Nebraska is very significant, with guidelines on the floor for the folks to find a way around to the restroom, to the rec room, and back to their workstations. Second of all, I think that, as I stay calm here, that the facility has also made significant safety improvements. As a member of the safety committee, I represent third shift, and I want to also let you folks know that the NFB is also welcome to express more interest in to find out what's happening to help the blind people be more supportive in their families and can make a living. Okay. Thank you.
Nancy?
Yes.
Nancy?
Oh, me? Go ahead. You have
me or Mike?
Nancy, well, okay, that's fine.
Dan Kramer. Excuse me, Dan Kramer. I'll be brief.
I think some things have been covered that I had in mind to say.
I'm also from Outlook. And I won't belabor some of the points that have already been talked about. I just happen to have been there 6 months, and I've heard reference a lot of times to changes have been made in the last 6 months. And I am one of those people, probably the first person that was asked to be a machine operator for one of the larger machines with a lot of moving parts. And I've had excellent training, and they will not, there's some things they don't let me do. I'm not totally blind. I have vision in one eye, don't have center vision, but they've given, and plus with the commission help, I've got some devices that help me read the screen and everything. But I'm disturbed by the way my case is in the process of being closed. I'm working with the commission in Omaha, and I was told 2 months ago that I'll get some paperwork in the mail. Don't be upset, Dan, when you see the paperwork and it says your case is closed unsuccessfully. I was totally thrown away by that. I actually had to pursue this job. One of my previous employers, I worked with somebody who husband works with. That's how I found out about it. And I brought it to the attention of my counselor at the commission, and he didn't encourage me. That's all I can say nicely. I dropped it. 2 months later, I came back and said, I did it on my own. And I will say, to the comment that Shelter Workshop, I worked 20 years for a very large manufacturer that became smaller as years went on. That's my job eventually disappeared. And I had a lot of experience with Shelter Workshop. Trust me, this is not a Shelter Workshop.
Okay. I have a quick question for you. You said that 2 months ago you got a letter that said your case was being
closed. I was told the letter was coming. I've talked to him twice and said, am I supposed to, did I miss something? I haven't seen the letter. Talked to him 4 days ago. He said it's coming in the mail. But
okay. So you're upset because the letter didn't come or because was going to be closed unsuccessfully?
You've got eight people here. That I worked last night, I worked tonight. And we took our time to try and we're growing like crazy. There's three people in Wisconsin, as we speak, buying new machines, $1 million machines. And I know we need more blind people, visually impaired like myself, who are totally blind, to work to keep this thing going. You talked about pay, Jim. I think you talked about pay.
Yeah. Right.
I can tell you for a fact, my job is $13.50 an hour. Guess how much I make? $9.50 an hour because I'm on disability. You think, most people say, Kramer, you're nuts for doing a job like that. You're leaving money on the table. I'm the kind of person that, needs, challenges. And
well, certainly, yeah.
And that's government. That's another total story. Government says I can't make more than that. But, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, what are people talking about, negative income and people not having jobs? You got it right here, folks.
Okay.
Julie?
Thank you. Nancy Floral is next, and then we'll go back to Mike Hansen.
I was just going to jump in and say that Carlos Servan and I do have a meeting set up on December 1st to sit down with Eric. And then probably, I don't know, must have been 3-4 months ago, Mark Pluchek did ask me for contact information. So they have all of the email addresses and telephone numbers for every counselor across the state. So they do have that. If you need to contact somebody in particular, you have that. We've kept that updated. When he recently lost the information on his computer, I resent it. So just so that you're aware of that. And I do want to address the unsuccessful closure. And Bob Deaton can jump in with this. This really isn't our decision, the unsuccessful closure. This is on a federal level in which they look at integrated employment. That is the number of people, how many sighted people are working versus blind individuals. And with Outlook for the federal contracts, I believe is it 75% of your workforce needs to be blind, and that's legally blind, and so that's considered federally not integrated employment. So if somebody chooses to go to work there and they're happy, that's fine. We're closing them unsuccessful. You guys are successful. That's why Robert was saying don't be upset at the wording. You're successful and you're happy, but we have to federally we have to put that language. We have no control over what the feds say. So just so that you know, that's why it is. If you're, as long as you're successful and happy, and I think Doug's wife, I'm sorry, Sandy was saying it comes to choice, And so if people are happy, but that's the language that we have to put in those closure letters.
So how come I will follow all kinds of people? We don't get them from the press. These are the kind of things I hear from our HR people. These are a little confusing.
And I have raised that question, but on a federal level, I brought this topic up to our supervisors and management meeting, and they recently researched this and again on a federal level and came back with the same comment that as long as it's not integrated employment, it's not considered a successful closure.
Two separate issues. I could care less if my case was closed successfully.
Right.
Regardless of me. And why did I have to pursue it twice to get the job there? We need to encourage this. We need to encourage employment. We need to, I'm hearing everybody say, let's take a new look. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's get going.
And then I guess the other thing I'm going to say is that, through the years as agencies, years ago, people were channeled into certain types of jobs. A long time ago, it was caning chairs and piano tuning and that type of thing. Each person with agency has their own individual program, so not everyone wants to work there. If somebody comes and they want a production type of job or something that has something that will go in those directions, we certainly do talk about that. Okay. But not every single person,
Well, I agree.
But on the flip side to that, over the years, if somebody's never worked, you know, we've had people that have worked it out, look to get work experience and use that as a stepping stone. So I think that you know, that helps them learn more about themselves, about what they want and don't want for themselves.
And I'm in a different place. I'm in the tail end of my career. I've had my career. This is not my career. I mean, I want a place that has health insurance. And thank you for your
You're welcome. I appreciate the opportunity to address that.
Ray Johnson had a question back here.
Sure. Is there anyone that has not had an opportunity to speak?
Nancy stated what I was going to say, by the way. So
you're okay.
I'm good.
Okay, from the floor, is there anyone else that has not had an opportunity to speak that would like to do so?
I agree.
I forgot to got kind of excited about the one at Dorner, and I forgot to tell you that my daughter is my driver and also my bookkeeper, and she does a real good job. And I had something happen to me before I got into this that I think might encourage some of them. When I was, before that, I never was told I was blind. I just knew I had bad eyes. At that one time, you never even heard of being legally blind. And I went out to get employment. That was in 1960. I went out to get employment at, it was Champion Home Builders. And I went out and I took a physical. And just a doctor that gave me the physical and just put on that I had bad eyes. So when I got out there, my interview, the guy said, well, you think you can do the job? I said, yeah. And he said, well, would you take 2 weeks trial? I said, yes. Before the 2 weeks is up, he come back and said I had a job. I worked for there over 10 years. I also worked on saws, and I still got all my fingers.
Yep.
Now, we can do a lot of things that people don't realize.
Exactly. Yes.
And I think we get people get cut short because they don't realize what we can do. And but at that time, I did better because I didn't know I was blind, but so it was kind of funny that way. But it does show that we can do things that most people don't think we can. But we still, and we also know we need help. I need my driver, and Terry's helped me out a lot. Jan's helped me out a lot, and I appreciate the help. I've always got good help from the visually impaired. And the reason I like the visually impaired, I never had them when I was young. I've been legally blind all my life. And so I really appreciate what they do. And working for a business or in a job is a lot better than drawing money than being handicapped. That's all I got to say.
Thank you. Okay, is there anyone else that has not had an opportunity to speak that would like to do so? Okay. That concludes our public comments, and we will take, let's take a 10-minute break so that we can get back to schedule, please.
Jeff, before you...